This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Thank you, Jake, for the news. As he has suggested, it is Election Day. Every one of you is entitled to, constitutionally entitled, I should think, to a sausage, a bacon, an egg roll, a homemade cake, or a jar of preserves. Whether you want some Malcolm Turnbulls, maybe a bit of Bill Shorten bread, possibly some Richard Di Nutella fudge, they are not mine. They come from the Camdenville Primary School. We are talking all things Election Tucker today. Stay with me. Yes, we are talking cravings. Good afternoon, 6:30 past one. My name is Pete Dillon. This is Cravings right here on Joy 94.9. It is Election Day, and I remind you, you are constitutionally entitled to a democracy sausage, bacon and egg burger, homemade cake, or jar of preserves. That is the thoughts of a young man by the name of Grant Custer, who is the UNA founder, the man behind the democracy sausage website. He joins me on the phone. Grant, good afternoon.
G'day, how are you going?
Mate, good to talk to you. Thank you for joining me. Let's talk a little bit about our constitutional right to a snack while we're waiting to vote. I did make a complaint to the City of Melbourne this morning. I went to vote at the Town Hall and not a soy latte, a kale chip, a quinoa frion, nothing available, not even a democracy sausage. How did the website come about?
It started in 2010. A couple of friends wanted to know where their nearest sausage sizzle was on election day and looked online, saw other people asking the same question. So put together the site then and started off very small. I think I only had 60 sausage sizzles mapped for that first election, and it's grown from there. It was popular for the 2013 election and even more popular this time. I think we've got 1,950 or so sausage sizzles and cake stalls mapped in Australia and around the world this time.
And there is, of course, an option to on your site, and you've also teamed up with the electionsausagesizzle.com.au people to perhaps rate which are the best and worst sausage sizzles going around. At least some places have them. I'm going to keep banging on about that fact. And I did have a very stern word to the Lord Mayor as he left Saturday Magazine this morning. There's something very ridiculously fun about rocking up to a polling station and finding a booth with a sausage or indeed a cake stall. I've stolen some information from the Camdenville Primary School. They've got Malcolm Turnbulls, two for a dollar, or you can have a ball sack for $3. Some Bill Shorten bread, two for $3, or some Richard Di Nutella fudge at $2. I think it's one of the funniest I've seen. The other was tweeted by Annabelle Crabb, which I have retweeted from Cravings Joy 949, which is a flan for jobs and growth. It's inherently Australian that we take a bit of the mick about out of the fact that we've got to go and vote.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've seen a number of specials, double dissolution specials, where you get two for the price of one. I think it's a combination of compulsory voting for us and voting on a Saturday, and we've picked schools and churches and other community groups as the locations for our polling places, and they've jumped on the opportunity to raise some funds for a long time now, and hopefully we can still do it in the in the future, despite pre-polling getting more popular and talk of online voting, a lot of people still want to be rewarded for spending that 20 minutes completing that Senate voting paper and getting a sausage in return.
Well, you have to get out of bed on Saturday morning and go and vote for perhaps something, two numpties that perhaps neither of us would like to, or you'd like to vote for neither of them, but there needs to be some reward, as you say. I think we should extend this out to the next, perhaps the next federal election where there are kale chips or a quinoa, whatever the fad is of the day, soy lattes, the whole deal, so that everybody gets taken care of. Why would you think, Grant, that some people don't take part in the sausage sizzle?
There's a number of reasons. I mean, one reason this time is that it's coincided with school holidays. So some schools, for example, just couldn't get enough volunteers because they're all on holidays and things like that. And others might be just too small and a host of other reasons. I think I'm up to almost one in three polling places now have a sausage sizzle, and I think the minimum for any given electorate is six. So we're pretty well covered.
I've actually pulled up some stats, mate, just to help you along with that argument. There are 6,618 polling booths in Australia and overseas for today's federal election. 1,945 of those do have some sort of space to go and get something, whether it is a bacon and egg roll or a snag and a bit of bread with some onions. 681 of those in New South Wales, 485 here in Victoria. There's a bit of a fight between Queensland and WA, and there are actually five, and this is the thing I find most extraordinary, five of these are overseas. So for those people who are voting internationally, they can still find a sausage sizzle, which may suggest that not having one is a bit un-Australian.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. India's on the map there, and the Netherlands had one earlier in the week as part of their pre-polling. And the number of complaints from the people in the UK, because they didn't get one, I think, due to regulation.
I think maybe nobody could afford one after the Brexit vote.
Yeah, there we go. Well, I think Australians have done more research on sausage sizzles than the Britons did on what the EU
on leaving the EU. Grant, have you been out and voted yourself and found a local sausage sizzle for yourself?
I did. I live up on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, so I've gone and voted and grabbed a sausage up at my local polling booth and. If I get a bit peckish this afternoon, I might duck back and see if they've got some left.
Well, you can go back and have another one. There's no requirement to get in line and vote again because, of course, you can't. Mate, grateful for your time this afternoon. I imagine you've had a busy day with media, and I like the fact that we as Australians can take the piss out of ourselves a little bit as well and have a site like yours. We are grateful for your sense of humour and for making Election Day and the Council of Australian Sausages making Election Day just slightly more palatable for the rest of us. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, no worries. Thank you.
That is Grant Caster. He is the founder of Democracy Sausage. It is a website. You can go to democracysausage.org and you will find where your nearest sausage sizzle is. If you're having to go and vote, don't do it hungry. You could make the wrong decision. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. It is 13 minutes past one on Election Day. There is much more to come as we continue our theme of sausages.
We're listening to you. SMS 0427 JOY 949, email onair at joy.org.au or call us 1300 JOY 949.
You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. It is a quarter past one. We are celebrating Election Day with talk of sausages. And I'm assuming somewhere in the fine state of Queensland, there is a man lousing about in a mankini, perhaps sunning his own sausage, possibly celebrating the birthday of one of his venues as well. His name is Matt Wilkinson. You know him well. Good afternoon, sir.
G'day, sir. How are we?
Good. Are you sunning your sausage in the Sunshine State?
It's actually quite cold.
What do you mean cold? Like 20 degrees?
Yeah, it's only about, 21. Yeah. It's cold in the shade, it's around the 18 mark. Mm. But, very nice.
My heart's not bleeding for you at all. You know a little bit about a sausage being a Brit. What makes a good sausage?
Oh, I don't know. I guess it's one of those things where sausages, it's culture to all around. You know, every bit of culture, every country's got its own, but not just the country. Within the country, there's different types of sausage. Like, take England, for example. Each county's got its own variation of a sausage.
Yes.
I think, I don't know if anybody knows, like a sausage mince needs to be 75% meat to 25% ratio for a good sausage. And generally there's a binder in there that helps soak up moisture. So when the sausage on the barbie like splits and pisses moisture everywhere, it's generally fat and water that's getting out, which generally dries up the sausage. So I'm a firm believer on there's a nice amount of fat in the sausage.
Yes.
I do love a good lamb sausage, I must admit. You know, like a merguez style.
Yeah, sausage. Nice and spicy.
Nice and spicy, and I am a fan of the old Cumberland, which is lots of allspice and black pepper and pat do a banging one.
Yes, that's. I think a Cumberland would be my favourite as well. So when Europe goes to the polls to vote for either Brexit or indeed a general election, what do the Brits do as far as having a little nosh at the election booth?
Nothing. They don't do anything.
Well, it's probably why you're getting kicked out of the European Union then.
They probably got a little bit of black pudding.
Right.
Most of the north of England. Well, you know, the English are renowned for their chipolatas. Size matters.
Mm-hmm.
A good cold sausage, I reckon. They're probably that tight. They probably took their own at home and taken with them.
Well, probably. Probably because it's less expensive and they don't have to buy one at the polling booth.
they're saving it for a pint.
Yes, well, correct. Hey, also when you're losing the soccer and get kicked out, or you're dumped out of a tournament like by Iceland, for example.
I'm sorry, I'm a rugby union fan.
What foods would you use to commiserate?
Because there have will you be seen that new Iceland ad?
No, but you know, I need to.
There's a frozen supermarket company in the UK called Iceland.
Yes.
And some funny buggers like pasted the English football team's faces over some of the delivery guys and done a voiceover, and it's hilarious.
For those playing at home that not of sporting mind, England were defeated in the European Soccer Cup?
Yeah. They lost 2-1 to Iceland. But that said, Iceland drew 1-1 with Portugal, who were the world champions.
Well, they have Cristiano Ronaldo. That's about all we need to know. But now we've seen this morning Wales have beaten Belgium to advance to the next round of the finals.
I'm actually saying myself Welsh. my mum was born on the border on the English side, but I'll say, and my sister represents a bit of all, although I was concerned on radio. Wales is a great country.
Matt Wilkinson is my guest. He's joining me to talk a little bit about all things sausage today and taking a bit of the mick out of the Brits. But on a slightly more serious note, a Melbourne institution almost, Pope Joan, is celebrating 6 years today.
Yeah, it is. I didn't even know that. I woke up this morning. You've got to love Facebook. It reminds you about your mum's birthday, your wife's birthday,
your anniversary.
And your business is 6 years old.
Mm.
It's been amazing. We're going through some bits and pieces at the moment for a reopening of night times in September, but it's definitely been an adventure.
6 years ago, when you flung open the front doors for the first time, did you expect that 6 years later your little empire may have grown as it has? And I won't call it an empire, but you've now got a couple of other venues there, fingers in other pies. Was that something you expected or wanted to happen, or is it something that you think has sort of happened by default?
Yeah, it kind of happened by default. I worked 4 months still at Circa while doing Pope Jones. I actually worked 4 months straight I didn't have a day off. And so I was doing mornings at Pope and then going through to Circa night times. during the weekend. My days off was the weekends at Circa, and I did weekends at Pope. And the idea was just, I was supposed to keep doing fine dining. I was going to try and find a restaurant and just keep poaching as a cafe, but it's built into this little, you know, I think it's a beautiful place. And, you know, I've got like four of the main staff from Day Dot that started with us still working there. And yeah, it's a special place. I love the element of the community. I was brought up in a pub, and the fact that it's the same faces day in, day out, Monday to Friday, and then changes at weekends, and that just really supports it. And it's something really quite special.
I would have grey fears if you opened a pub for you, for your liver and mine, if nothing else. You've got a great business partner. What do you attribute the success of Pojone? Is it because you guys respect one another enough to appreciate difference, or is it just that you both sort of can see an end game that is very similar?
Yeah, I don't know. It's like 6 years. It's not actually a long time if you think about it for business. But in hospitality, in the restaurant scene, it is. But I think just that willingness to... I think you said the word hospitality business. It's still about being hospitable.
Yeah.
And being behind it. Well, we were Day Dot, blood and guts in there, and there's something nice behind that. And an ownership. Yeah, I guess kind of like buying that house or owning your own house. It's very different having... owning something than managing something.
Correct.
And yeah, I think it's just, I don't know, it's just, I think the people that we've had through there, the customers that we have, and you know, just the my belief in food, it's just a nice package. And you know, it's very Melbournean. I still think it's hilarious that I get called a hipster.
Oh God, who's and calling like, you that?
I know, that's the thing. I'm like, I've got a body built for beer.
Definitely don't fit the hipster mold.
But we get, you know, when we first opened, we were called like the hipster cafe. Like, there's nothing really that hipster about it. You know, might have one, you know, guy with a beard, but I don't call that hipster.
I'd hate to tell him that, but I don't reckon he'd be able to rock the skinny jeans look, buddy. what comes next? So we've seen Jack Horner open, and I know you've got some fingers in other things else. So what comes next for you?
Well, I'm actually going to put myself back into, so believe it or not, I've actually sold Jack Horner.
Oh, okay.
I might get in trouble. It's settled tomorrow, handover's tomorrow.
Right.
And
you heard it here first.
Yep. I'm going to go back into cooking poached egg at night times, actually, in the second week of September.
Mm-hmm.
And just go back in, actually, 2 years off cooking, kind of. I've kind of missed it. So going to go back, I've got a new guy coming front of house, Gus, who's an English guy who's worked at a lot of wine bars in London.
Yep.
And got a real wine focus. And just go back to things that I actually really do love doing. And believe it or not, being a chef, one of them is actually cooking.
That is odd. Most of your contemporaries are out chasing book deals and TV programs, and they're so busy attending festivals and cooking demonstrations and stuff, they're rarely in their own business.
Yeah, and that is true. That was I put my hand up, that was me, and it was great and really enjoyed it. But, you know, I think with the kids getting a bit older and actually fighting in front of things, it's time to leave it to Shirley at night time and hide away from home.
Yeah, lovely. there had to be some sort of mad excuse, mate. It's good to talk to you. I'll let you get back to your family gathering on Queensland's coast, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Awesome.
Good on you. That's Matt Wilkinson celebrating 6 years at Pojone today. He's not there to celebrate it, but certainly worth going to check it out and giving them a little tipple. He's given us a bit of a British view on sausages as well. It's going to come a time today where you're either going to celebrate or commiserate. And to do that, you want to celebrate with a nice glass of something, or maybe you might need to drown your sorrows. We won't know the result of the election until later tonight. A reminder that Joy has a special broadcast, sticks until 9 p.m. tonight, presented by the Saturday Magazine and our news, our journalistic team. We will be on air from 6 o'clock. I will join Dean Beck, Kirsty Marshall, Macca, and a whole raft of others who are going to bring an election broadcast to you, so that hopefully by the time we are ready to tuck ourselves in at 9 o'clock, we can at least give you some definitive results of this election. So that's from 6 p.m. right here on Joy 94.9 tonight. Some of the finest political minds in the country will be in this studio and on the phone. So stay tuned for that if you want your election night that doesn't involve Anthony Green with touch screens and all sorts of other weirdness. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. Very shortly, we're going to meet Tyson Stelzer, who's going to tell you how you can celebrate or commiserate with something nice out of a bottle this evening. 27 minutes past one. You're on Cravings on Joy 94.9. I am Pete Dillon.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. Joy.
Pete Dillon here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. I apologise for that short break in transmission. It is election day. We have been talking democracy sausage all day. Not all day, certainly for the last half an hour. And there will come a time later in the day where you're either going to want to celebrate, pop a bottle of something because your team has won this lengthy battle, or indeed you might need to commiserate. Somebody who would know exactly what to have with either of those occasions is an esteemed Australian wine writer. His name is Tyson Stelzer. He knows more about champagne than pretty much anyone. G'day, mate.
G'day, Pete. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good, good. Good. It is election day, and we are going to need to have a little something tonight, whether it is to drown a sorrow or to celebrate a government that we approve of. Let's start with...
Absolutely, in victory and in defeat, as Sir Winston Churchill once said.
Indeed. Would Winston Churchill drink champagne in defeat?
Yes, absolutely, and that was his comment.
So what should we... If we're on our way out now, we've been and voted, we've had our democracy sausage, we've picked up a jar of preserves that somebody has made, what are we going to stop at our independent liquor store and buy?
There are so many great champagnes in Australia at the moment, and there are mainly three categories in champagne. The ones that we know the best are the big houses, the famous names, the négociants, as the French call them, who buy fruit from many different growers. And then there are also the tiny little growers themselves who produce their own champagnes from their own vineyards, and then the cooperatives, so kind of in between. They have ownership of growers and produce the wines from their own growers. And at the moment, Australia is drinking more of the big houses than as a proportion than any other major champagne country in the world, and less of the growers. So there's something to be discovered in the little family-owned estate, perhaps lesser-known champagne brands, but we've got good representations on our shelves, but Australians just aren't drinking them quite as much.
How do we find them, Tyson? How do we know? I'm assuming we all know what Krug is, or Louis Roederer, or Bollinger, or maybe Tattinger, or certainly Moët, and some of those. How do we know about these little guys? What are some of the small ones that we could look for that might certainly compete both at a price point or indeed at a quality level with some of those bigger houses?
Yeah, absolutely. And many of them are a little bit less expensive because they're not spending so much money on their branding, but pouring it into the fruit and the vineyards and the wines themselves, of course. There's one brand in Australia that's well distributed because it's brought in by the De Bortoli family, so we can find it in most stores, and it's called Veuve Fourny, Fourny, and they are very affordable, beautifully made, mostly belongs from the Côte de Blanc strip in Champagne, the famous Chardonnay vineyards. They are fantastic. And then there are some others that are available, but tiny, tiny productions, so a little harder to find. Great brands like Aigle Urier, one of the hardest ones to pronounce, E-G-L-Y, and Lamondia Bernier, L-A-R-M-N-D-I-E-R, also a Côte de Blanc producer. These are brands that... the collectors love and snap up when they can, mostly in smaller independent retailers.
The Verfourni, I'm familiar with it. Nice sort of toasted brioche sesame kind of taste to it, is that right?
Talking. Yeah, exactly. These are wines that are made with a good amount of bottle age. Champagne has to be aged in the bottle before it's released for at least 1.5 years or thereabouts, 15 months, and the Fournies age it for longer than that minimum stipulation. So that means that it has more of those toasty brioche characters as you described them.
It is quite yum, actually. Mate, let's take a step back. For those who don't know Tyson Stelzer, how did you, first of all, get into this world of champagne? How did it open up for you?
I've been writing about wine now for 14 years, and I've been honoured to have a number of my projects featured on your program over those years. And in the last 5 years, champagne's become a real focus for me. I'm going to Champagne now 4 times a year, starting to host champagne tours for the first time, but most importantly, writing my champagne guide, which comes out every 2 years, trying to get up-to-date reviews and some quite frank commentary about champagne into the English-speaking language. There's not much written about it in English, and what I'm writing is a bit controversial too. I'm prepared to say when a champagne house or a particular trend in the region is not on form, and for that reason attracted a little bit of controversy, and I'm out of sorts with some houses because I don't say their wines are good enough, but that's the way it is. I'm a critic, and I love to celebrate champagne. There's a lot to celebrate about it, and certainly point champagne lovers in the direction of the best champagnes to buy this year.
Indeed. How many maisons are there in Champagne?
There are about 400 of the houses themselves, close to 400, but of the growers who are producing their own wines, there are more than 4,000. So there's something in the order of 5,000 different champagne brands in the world. But sadly, in Australia, we only actually see a couple of hundred of those. We don't have quite the diversity here that some of the other big champagne markets see.
Is that the tyranny of distance because we are so far from that part of the world, or is it simply about the production levels aren't high enough to be able to distribute them internationally?
I think it's a little bit of both, and there's an interesting trend here in that Australia is what the Champenois describe as quite a mature market in champagne, and that we understand different champagne styles. But the challenge at the moment is that growth in champagne consumption in Australia has just gone ballistic in the last 10 years. And what that means is we are, on the figures of the last 12 months, we are the fastest growing champagne market in the world, Pete. We're drinking 25% more bottles of champagne than we were the year before.
Why is that?
And that means that I don't know, but I think it's fantastic. We must have either a lot to celebrate or a lot to commiserate.
Well, I guess one of the... I'm going to make an assumption here. We see the support of some of those houses and some of those quite big houses, as you mentioned, Mormer's a good example, at Spring Racing. Yep. So we've all become a bit more familiar. We're probably willing to spend a little bit more on a bottle of French rather than, you know, some of them are only $20 dearer than some of the decent Australian sparkling. So much to the rue, I think, of the Australian industry. That's a bit, I think we've become...
We're actually drinking less Australian sparkling than we were, and we're drinking a lot more French. So what you're saying is correct. People are prepared to trade up. But the interesting thing is in other wine categories, when they've traded up on price, they've bought less. So the actual amount of wine that's selling has diminished. With champagne, the price that we're spending on champagne has gone down just a touch in the past year, but the amount that we're drinking has gone up astronomically, which is fascinating and exciting.
Tyson Stelzer is my guest. He is a wine writer, and he's a man who knows more about champagne than anybody else I know. You've got a series of events coming up around the country. Let's talk a little about those.
This is my champagne tasting adventure. We call it Taste Champagne. Melbourne again this year for the third time, Sydney for the third time, Brisbane for the first time. This is the biggest champagne event series in the country, and all your listeners are invited to join us. I'm bringing 46 champagne houses, growers and cooperatives to Melbourne. We are popping 130-some cuvées, and the date for Melbourne
is August 22nd.
22nd of August, Monday evening. It's a serious champagne tasting, and everybody's welcome along to come and not only taste the champagnes, but also meet the people who bring these wines into the country and who really know the stories behind not only the familiar brands, but also to discover some of the less familiar growers and smaller houses that you may not have tasted before, but might represent good value and add something exciting to add to your drinking list coming into the champagne season later this year?
Well, you know, it's big in spring, it's big at Christmas, it's big in early in the year with Valentine's Day and that sort of thing. But as we go to winter, now I'm going to talk about today in particular because there are people who are going to be disappointed with what happens at today's election.
Sure. Yeah.
Is there a more broody champagne that we should drink, or do we... Dare I say this, you're probably going to shoot me down the phone, drag out a sparkling Shiraz to drown our sorrows. What should we...
Well, it's not such a silly thing to suggest. And while I write incessantly about champagne, I'm also reviewing all of the Australian sparkling wines every year. And we are in an exciting country for sparkling production, from, you know, elegant Tassie fizz right through to those big sparkling Shirazes like you suggest. But here's the interesting thing about drinking champagne in winter in Melbourne or anywhere in Australia. I was in Champagne last week, the middle of summer. It is colder in Champagne in the middle of summer than it is in Brisbane in the middle of winter, and Melbourne falls somewhere in between. So when people say, I only drink champagne in summer, I'll say, well, you know, the Champenois drink this all year round, and by goodness, their winter, minus 10, snowing. So there is, as far as I'm concerned, no end of champagne season in Australia. But that said, to answer your question, if you're eating... something like a steak or a lamb or something that's more red meat focused, I'd absolutely go for red wine or a sparkling Shiraz in place of a champagne. But outside of that, champagne has a lot of versatility with, you know, white meats, pork, chicken, obviously all seafoods, most Asian dishes. There's plenty of versatility to head toward, be it a lighter style champagne like a Chardonnay based Blanc from the Côte de Blanc, or a fuller, more fleshy champagne such as a Blanc de Noir, made exclusively from Pinot Noir or Pinot Meunier. And some of the villages which do that particularly well are the beautifully named Bouzy on the Montagne de Reims.
Yes.
And other villages around it. They just get a little bit warmer and it produces richer style of Pinots.
So this is probably leading me to my next and probably close to final question. There are really only three grapes that are used to make champagne, Pinot Meunier, Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. Is there anything else that's used?
Almost all champagnes are made from those three grapes. So there's actually quite a long list that's permitted in the region. Pinot Blanc, Petit Meunier, etc. There are more obscure grapes that some smaller growers are playing with, which historically have had a place in champagne, more recently less so. Interesting without perhaps being as elegant as the classic grapes of Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Meunier.
Excellent. So we remind people, 22nd of August, they can find your website at?
tastechampagne.com.au, and I look forward to welcoming everybody in Melbourne and Sydney or Brisbane, if it suits your listeners better, different dates in August as well.
Indeed.
Come and join us. Drink 130 champagnes in one night. Biggest champagne event in the country.
Please don't offer me that challenge, Tyson, because you know I will try. mate, good to talk to you.
I'll be there.
Yes, I will be there. Whichever side you barrack for in the election, I hope your team wins. And I'm assured that you'll be popping something later in the day that will be either to celebrate or commiserate. Thank you for your time.
Everyone's a winner. Thanks.
Good on you. Thanks, Tyson. That's Tyson Stelzer. He's one of Australia's foremost wine writers and certainly a man that knows pretty much all there is to know about champagne. We are always delighted to have his company. From here, my friends, we are going to talk to Skinner and Hackett. It is the most delightfully named butchery or meat store. It's not in necessarily a butchery. It's in Carlton, but... we're going to have a couple of messages, but before we do that, it's getting to that time of the day. It's the afternoon. I need to think about a little bit of afternoon delight, so I'll be bringing you a bit of music as well. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. It's almost an election day special. It's 19 minutes to 2. If you love a good podcast, we have new podcasts here, including cravings.joy.org.au. The VAC team look at the issues important to the LGBTIQ community this federal election on Well, Well, Well. Megsy and Michelle chat to gay and lesbian officer Gabby about violence in the wider community on transpositions. Fee, Bree and Motti share their highlights of AFL Round 14 and preview the rounds ahead on Chicks Talkin' Footy. And what does it mean to be an LGBTIQA plus ally? Find out on Unicorn Youth with Delcy, Harriet and Danny. Joy Podcast, where you want them and when you want them at joy.org.au via iTunes. This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9. We are celebrating, in some ways, Election Day. We are talking about the democracy sausage. I remind you, if you get a minute, go to the Camdenville Primary School. I think they're in New South Wales. They've got a magnificent picture of their cake stall where they're selling Malcolm Turnbulls two for a dollar, or you can have a ball sack for $3. Some Bill Shorten bread two for $3, or some Richard Di Nutella fudge at $2 as well. It's just the most hilarious thing I've ever seen. That and Annabelle Crabb tweeting earlier about the flan for jobs and growth, another puntastic idea on a cake stall. Skinner, speaking of puntastic, we're about to introduce you to a man by the name of Jonathan Stobbs. And they say great ideas often start their lives being scrawled on a paper napkin over a couple of glasses of Plonk. And a couple of people sort of did that, and that was the foundation of Skinner and Hackett. Now, I don't know that we're going to call this anything other than a purveyor of fine meats. Jonathan might change that for me. Good afternoon, sir.
Hello, how are you going?
Is that a fair description of your business, a purveyor of fine meat?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair description. We're not butchers, so we don't profess to have that skill level. Really, I set up the business help people connect with small producers, basically. So if you think of my business as a wine shop, but instead of having wine, we have meat. So we talk about the producer, we talk about the region where it comes from, and we talk about the breed of the animal too. So it's quite different.
It's funny you mentioned wine shop. Your career before playing with meat was, in fact, was booze, was it not?
It was indeed, yes. I spent many years in the wine industry, and, doing that, you meet people like Matt Wilkinson and lots of other great chefs in Melbourne and talk about wine and food and get into it that way. So I always find that in my ventures in that world, it was very hard to find those sorts of small products that those guys use. So that was also why, tried to make those connections with those people and put together a store where we sell them.
Funny, you were just mentioning Matt Wilkinson. We were on the phone to him not so long ago. He's somewhere in Queensland in a man thong, sunning his own sausage, I believe.
No, what a picture. Thanks for that.
Yeah, it's something we could all do without. Hey, so some of those small producers, I think because we've become far more sophisticated in the way that we consume food. I call this the MasterChef phenomenon in some regard, because those reality TV shows that have introduced us to particular cuts of meat, particular ways of preparing and then placing those foods has given rise to a far more sophisticated consumer who is going to start demanding, where do I find beef cheeks? Where do I find lamb ribs? Where do I find some of these things that ordinarily would have been considered tertiary cuts and gone into, a casserole mix or something?
Yeah, look, I agree. I mean, we're selling, and I think, we as a business push those things too. Things like the hanger steaks, the butler steak, the tri-tip, all of those sorts of cuts. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that, a butcher would have to give away lamb shanks, and look at how popular they are.
I know, right? Why am I paying $7 a shank?
Yes, well, because they're delicious. That's why you're paying $7 a shank.
Right.
And it is what it's worth. I mean, but I do wonder what happens to all the lamb shanks in the summer. I mean, obviously we only eat them in the middle of winter, so it's always a wonder what happens to them in the other end of the scale.
Perhaps people are buying them and freezing them and saving them for summer.
Maybe, but I think a lot of pet food probably gets a bit of a boost.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say
in
that.
In regard to, what happens to them, who knows. But I do think, we love a lot of those secondary cuts as well, because, they are super tasty and they're, much better value for money. But I'd have to say, though, that the largest selling product we have is eye fillet, unfortunately, because it's easy and people like it and, there's no waste. And people love eating the I think it was Neil Perry that once said that God gave you teeth for a very good reason, and that was to eat rump steak instead of eye fillet.
The good old Neil Perry. That's a bit of a cracker. Jonathan Stobbs is my guest. He's the owner of Skinner and Hackett in Carlton. Have you got any lamb ribs in the shop?
I do have lamb ribs, yes. Another great cut that we love to get people. Yeah, certainly it's one of the cheapest parts of the animal.
Excellent, because I had some last night, a little restaurant in Little Collins Street. I probably shouldn't give the name, but I will, at Burma Lane, and had these beautiful Burmese-inspired lamb ribs that were almost an epiphany. They were just outstanding. So brilliant things can be done with these cuts of meat.
Yeah, well, we hire smokers here at Skinner and Hackett, and one of the things that I think is probably the best thing is the smoked lamb ribs that we've done on occasion, which is just sensational. Cover them in sumac and olive salt, and put them in the smoker for about 4 hours, and they come out the other side just, like you say, being an epiphany of lamby deliciousness.
Well, we could do with a tray of those about 6 o'clock as we kick off our election broadcast tonight. Hey, I do want to talk. It is election day. It is the day where all Australians are constitutionally entitled to a democracy sausage or a bacon egg roll at their polling booth. What goes in your mind as a purveyor of fine meat to be the perfect sausage? What is that?
Well, I think it's a question of what the political party can afford to give away, or and that's you know, I mean, look, a sausage is basically a vehicle for whatever is the end price. Basically, I mean, if you don't want to spend a lot of money for a sausage, and you see those funny pink things in supermarkets that you know, they call sausages, but really it's just all rusk and fat, basically. You know, a real quality sausage. We sell the fabulous Pacton Park sausages.
From Jim Arrowsmith. Good stuff.
That's it. Yes, yes, young Jimmy. I got onto to Jimmy as a producer through Matt back in the day. And yeah, look, I mean, he has taken it to the very pinnacle of what a sausage should be. He uses only free range pork and only female pigs and only the shoulder of those female free-range pigs. So,
is that because, you know, there's less uric acid in the female pig than there is in the male pig?
Well, I think now modern-day pigs are, you know, chemically neutered, so that they say that there is supposedly less of the boar taint in the pigs. They are essentially hermaphrodites. They have no sex when they're slaughtered. So, yes, indeed. So, yes, they do say that there is. But, you know, I mean, Jimmy's sticking to his guns and only using the females, and good on him. I mean, you know, you can taste it in his sausages. They are delicious.
Well, my granny used to call them a sack full of lips and arseholes, so that's a lovely way of describing the sausage.
Yes, indeed. And I think that's sort of that, you know, pink sausage that has very little texture to it, which has been ground up to within an inch of its life, to sort of basically mask what it really is.
Terrific. Jonathan, if people want to see you on the interwebs, what's your site?
We only have a touch page for our site, but our Facebook page is definitely the best place to see what we muck around with.
Well, they can call into your store in Rathdown Street in Carlton and, in fact, have a look.
Yes, indeed.
Good stuff. Thanks for joining me. Enjoy the remainder of your election day. Vote well, vote often, and I hope you get to celebrate or commiserate, whichever it is.
May your sausage always be long and warm.
Indeed. May your sausage always be long and warm. Thanks, Jonathan. That's Jonathan Stobbs. He is the proprietor of Skinner and Hackett in Carlton, a purveyor of fine meat, and certainly someone we should be talking to on the day where it is your constitutional right to a democracy sausage. You're on Cravings here on Joy 94.9. You're soon to go travelling with the Escape Pod. I wonder where they shall take you.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
I'm done here. I've done as much yarping about the snag as I can possibly do. Noel Dempsey is joining the team on the Escape Pod as they discover Ballarat. I would recommend that you listen in because I think Ballarat's rather a lovely place. A bit chilly at this time of year, but you'll get through that. Enjoy your afternoon. I've been Pete Dillon. This is Cravings, and you are on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.